we're really in the middle of a at least 5 year, but probably more like a decade decline in fertility across our industry. In the, 2015, 16 range, we were still hatching at, 85, 86% life of flock. Today, we're doing really well if we can hatch in the 75 to 77% range life of flock.
We want to thank the innovative companies and products whose support and trust make this podcast possible.
DietForge.ai, AI-powered feed formulation with non-linear ingredient modeling and real-time collaboration. Finally, modern software for modern nutritionists. Poultry Star is a unique feed ingredient that includes a prebiotic and probiotic, and it's designed specifically for poultry. Improve gut health with Poultry Star. Learn more at dsm-firmenich.com/poultrystar. Natural Biologics is looking deeper to find the natural solutions to your poultry health challenges. Zoetis Hatchery Health Team helps you raise field-ready birds with a strong immune foundation. Learn more at zoetis.com.
Welcome to the Poultry Podcast Show, presented by Wisenetics. I'm Doug Corver, dedicated to bringing you the latest insights and discussions in the poultry industry. Get ready to expand your knowledge and stay ahead with today's episode. If you find this interview interesting, please let us know by visiting our website at wisenetics.com. Our guest today is Dr. Gina Wilson, and Gina is a professor emerita at the University of Georgia, and she has recently transitioned into being a consultant. So welcome to the program, Gina.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that very much.
Gina, can you tell us a little bit about your career path to the current position? Were you always interested in poultry, or is that something that came along the way?
Well, I grew up on a beef cattle farm in southwestern Virginia, and there were no chickens anywhere. I don't even remember backyard chickens in our neighborhood, but went off to Virginia Tech looking for an ag career. And like many young people, the only ag professional I had ever known was our old time vet that came to the farm and worked the cattle with my dad. And, so I'm going to be a vet. Well, that didn't last very long because I realized I didn't like to deal with sick animals. And so I started looking around, and because of 4-H youth program in the U.S., I had won a trip to compete in the National Chicken Barbecue Contest and didn't know that Virginia Tech had a poultry science department at that time. But the faculty recruited me to come over and practice before I went to nationals. And, kind of as they say, the rest is history, because they were recruiting young people. And it looked like a good thing to me. And honestly, I never looked back, because it was a really good opportunity for someone in ag that didn't have a big family farm to go home to or anything like that. So poultry has been really a blessing in my life. A lot of my good friends are poultry farmers or integrator people, company folks. So it's been a great career path, and I would encourage young people to look at it for sure.
A healthy gut leads to healthy chicks. That's where Poultry Star comes in. Poultry Star is a symbiotic, meaning it has both a probiotic and a prebiotic, and it contains live, metabolically active lactic acid bacteria that were isolated from the intestines of healthy birds, not the soil like most competitive products. When you think gut health, think Poultry Star. Learn more at dsm-firmenich.com/poultrystar.
So you've had an impactful career and tenure at the University of Georgia, and now you're working as a consultant. So you've got a perspective, a long-term perspective on broiler breeders. So what were some of the big concerns when you first started working with broiler breeders?
You know, some of the real concerns were how could we feed the rooster separate from the female. When I was in graduate school at Auburn, Gaynor McDaniel was my major professor, and he was very concerned about this. He was a geneticist by training and could see what was coming, that we were going to get birds that really had two different nutritional requirements. And he was also looking at, could the poultry industry artificially inseminate at an industrial level? And I was sort of in that mix. And there, when he and folks in the poultry industry decided we were going to come up with a mechanical way of sex separate feeding in the hen house. And so I got to see that all from a very organic level and really take over the industry. So that was the first big problem that I saw in how people were going to manage. And that has taken off, obviously, and is worldwide now that people are sex separate feeding in the hen house. So that was the first big issues, but they have not stopped there, have they? They have continued with the genetic potential of these birds.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you mentioned the changes in genetics over time. So obviously genetic selection for broiler traits primarily has had some unintended consequences for the broiler breeders. What are some of the challenges that the industry is dealing with right now, and how do managers deal with those challenges?
You know, we're really in the middle of a at least 5 year, but probably more like a decade decline in fertility across our industry. In the 2000. 15, 16 range, we were still hatching at, 85, 86% life of flock. Today, we're doing really well if we can hatch in the 75 to 77% range life of flock. The last 15 weeks in the hen house is very, very difficult to get good hatchability. And again, it revolves around the genetic potential of these birds. It's very difficult to feed restrict them enough. It's to keep them reproductively active. And when I say reproductively active, it's more behavior and ability to complete the natural mating than it is a physiological issue. I'm trained as a physiologist, and the reproductive potential is still there at 60 weeks. Egg production, as you know, declines in the female, and shell quality declines in the female. But the ability of the rooster to naturally mate has declined in those last weeks. It's, and how people are combating that is really by rooster replacement, if you want to call it that, putting younger males in. Spiking is another term for that. That is still very active program. And, some parts of the world are able to do a better job than we are here in the U.S. I think I can admit that. A lot of it has to do with house size. But one of the things that it's really encouraging to me in the last year, year and a half, is that the poultry industry here in the U.S. has really embraced the fact that, okay, we have a bigger bird and we are going to have more feeder space for a bigger bird, because there are no second helpings, are there? I mean, they eat so quickly that the feed is just gone in 30, 40 minutes in older birds. And so everybody has to have a spot at the feeder if they are going to be a productive bird.
So you mentioned the males obviously are bigger, but is that also in part due to selection for breast muscle?
You're exactly right. It's a composition, if you will. The roosters are, by the time they're 40 to 50 weeks old, well, 45 to 50 weeks old, they're top heavy because of all that breast meat. And I mean, you do your best to restrict that. But if you over restrict, you basically take that rooster out of semen production. If he is not in a positive nutritional plane intake, then reproduction will just decline. So breast meat, breast deposition is definitely an issue with these birds. But we've gotten to the point you can only restrict them so much. And I've seen this really in the industry. They do a great job rearing, putting these birds in the house. And then when you commingle, you know, trying to keep the sexes separately and feed everybody what they need. And usually the rooster just gets too large, too much fleshing. Or it goes the other direction. He declines because we've over-restricted. So, you know, it's a very fine line in there as to what is best as far as restriction. But again, making sure that everybody can eat, has a spot at the feeder. These birds, that's one of the unintended consequences, isn't it, of genetic selection for meat deposition, is these birds have a tremendous appetite and they eat very quickly. And so, I mean, their opportunity to eat just disappears if we don't have enough feeder space for them. So it's capital investment on the part of the farmer. They're going to have more feeder space. But there are other issues there too. We tend to feed a pretty concentrated diet. And we can have all the feeder space we want, but if we don't have feed volume to put to cover that feeder space, we haven't accomplished as much as we need to for these birds. So volume is an important aspect. For sure.
Well, we've been talking about diluted breeder diets for decades. So why do we still feed concentrated diets?
Well, you know, I've discovered on multiple occasions, I'm a fairly naive person, and maybe I didn't realize all the consequences, but putting a filler in a diet, first of all, it's hard to mix. Some people are very concerned about the feed bridging and not flowing very well with the filler. Other consequences of this is you have to have another feed ingredient in a mill that's already crowded, right? We don't have enough storage space for maybe another ingredient. That other ingredient costs money. So it's a cost, but also the transportation of a very fluffy diet. Some of the integrators that are working in this area, their mixer, they're only able to mix about half the quantity with this filler in there. So that's, you know, tons per man hour reduces. So it costs more to mill it, haul it, store it. You know, there's a lot of resistance, I guess is what I'm saying, to make that change. And then I would say I've been reminded on multiple occasions, if the poultry industry really started utilizing high fiber diets, there would probably not be enough fiber ingredients out there for the whole industry. So I keep telling folks we need to be inventive and look at some other ingredients besides just the same old things of wheat mids and rice hulls and in Canada, there's some other I can't think of flax and such as that. But yeah, we're going to have to be more inventive. You know, beef cattle people and dairy, don't they use all sorts of beet pulp and citrus pulp? And, you know, I don't know what the next ingredient will be, but I think we're going to have to look towards that. And the industry is moving in that direction, just not real dramatically. Particularly with male diets in the hen house, where we've moved into that area. And yes, you've got to have more filler with those sorts of diets.
Yeah, and I'm sure the companies have economists working on that, you know, a 10% decline in fertility, you know, that has a huge economic impact as well. So, you know, it'll be interesting to see how the industry responds.
You're absolutely right on that. It is an economic issue that will be solved, you know, by looking at all aspects of it. But what really has gotten people's attention since COVID is the fact that they literally cannot hatch enough chicks. They are at hatchery capacity. Many of the eggs don't hatch well, but there's no more space. So that's another added cost, isn't it, to build more hatchery space, incubation space, to try to get more chicks. So it is a real multifaceted problem, but one that we're going to have to solve as a worldwide poultry industry.
If you're enjoying this episode of the Poultry Podcast Show presented by Wisenetics, please remember to like, subscribe, and share it with your friends and family. You can also set notifications to on from our channel so you don't miss any other upcoming episodes. As always, please feel free to leave us your comments at any time. Your feedback is important to us. So, Gina, before the break, we were talking about the impact of genetic selection on for broiler traits on the broiler breeders. And you talked about how the male fertility really seems to be the biggest issue. What about the females? Are they struggling as well, or are they facing new challenges?
The females really, I think, are doing relatively well, except they do have a greater decline in egg production as they age in comparison to the birds, the more classic hens we used 20, 25 years ago. And they tend to have more shell quality issues. But if you also look at the birds in the chicken house, one of the fertility issues that really is apparent in a good percentage of the birds is they tend to lose a lot of their feathers. And by the time they're, 50 weeks old, they will not be fully covered. And you might, for the novice, they might say, what's that have to do with fertility? Well, you know, natural mating, you've got roosters with toenails and spurs, and these females can be cut during the mating act when they don't have full coverage. And chickens are pretty smart. Those hens will just stay away from the primary mating area, which is often the scratch area, in the late afternoon and evening. So that really hurts fertility. I mean, I think we've nutritionally done a lot to try to grow the feathers and hold the feathers on these females. But again, there's a lot of abrasion and the feathers break and fall out. And, a female that is laying eggs doesn't usually make feathers. So to get her to come back and make feathers, we'd have to take her out of egg production. And we don't want to do that, right? So our biggest opportunity is in rearing to try to grow the best feather, second feather, set of feathers. Usually the third set that she will keep look very similar. So nutritionally, house density wise, we want to make sure she comes out of that grow house with the best feathers she can have, and that will help her. Now, one other aspect that I have noticed, the bird of today, the female of today, she still has the capacity to put on a lot of abdominal fat. And a lot of people will tell you that these birds don't get very fat, and that's probably part of their egg production issue. But what I see is as she ages, we probably don't always pull enough of the feed back as she declines in egg production. And she puts on, by the time she's 55, 58 weeks, she will have a pretty good fat pad on her. And that is not conducive to sperm storage. So in the sperm storage tubules, you'll have poor storage of those spermatozoa. So I always encourage people, if they don't believe that, go to your 60-week-old flock or your 62-week-old flock you're getting ready to sell and necropsy a few birds and see how much abdominal fat they have. It's often more than you think. All we do is look at them in the field with those broad breasts. But if you look at them, they often have more abdominal fat, which is not conducive to fertility in the female. So she does have an impact on the fertility of the flock, for sure.
So going back to the feather cover issue, is that a change in the quality of the feathers, or is it just heavier males mating and putting more strain on the feathers and shedding more feathers?
I think it's a combination of both. You know, as a applied researcher, my years at UGA, I had an opportunity to grow a flock of breeders, and I looked at feather cover on those birds, and we did not have males with those birds. And at 65 weeks, they had gorgeous feathers. So I know it is a male impact. Definitely, the more mating, the fewer the feathers, the more breakage and damage to the feather cover. But also, you know, you got to grow good feathers in the beginning. If you have more room in the chicken house, in other words, a lower density of birds, you will also have better feathers. And one of the observations I have made recently is if you have more feeder space, there's not going to be as much abrasion and fighting to get to the feeder. They can get to a space much easier. And so their feathers are not damaged. But certainly ingredient intake is important. There are a lot of micronutrients that are important for good feathers growth. So that, again, we need to have good distribution of the feed to all the birds so that they get a good complement of the feed to make some good feathers. So
it sounds like a reduction in stocking density in the barn might have a benefit in a couple of different areas.
Yes, I think we are definitely learning that as we go along here.
And that might not be something producers want to hear, but it comes down to an economic decision.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You're right.
So let's change gears a little bit. Recently, you've been part of a team that has published a few papers on using technology to quantify breeder behavior, nest selection, mating activity, and so on. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yes. Before I left UGA and retired, I was involved with some engineers that joined our department. I had years earlier been involved in some projects where we videotaped the chicken house throughout the day for different purposes. One was to look at feeding behavior and drinking behavior. But in the evening, we also looked at mating behavior because, you know, more than 50% of the mating activity between these birds happens within 4 hours of the lights going out. And we learned that by our videotapes. Okay. But videotaping in that way is extremely laborious. And of course, graduate students did more of that work than I did, but it was just very difficult. And I was really happy to see new technology come in. Because in the videotaping, you couldn't always tell whether the bird had actually copulated. The male just might have sat on top of the female. And moved around a little bit, but we didn't actually get semen transfer. So the AI models that have the engineers have come up with are a lot better than the human eye. Obviously, we have to teach those models, you know, what is a completed mating and what is not. But they're a lot better, a lot more accurate. We can gather a bigger sample size than we ever could by using graduate students. So I think that we will see more and more of this to help us answer questions of what might keep more of the females in the scratch area during the mating time. And can we provide snacks? You know, we're often distributing cracked corn or oyster shell, trying to entice the females to stay in the scratch area to be mated. But we haven't really evaluated those tools very well. We've just said, well, it couldn't hurt, you know. So the AI technology is going to be tremendous for us. And it also stretches over into nesting behavior. And how do we encourage most hens to lay the eggs in the nest? I mean, AI value, the computer learning tools that the engineers are developing are just tremendous. And again, I think that that will help us harvest more eggs out of these houses. There's a good number of eggs that we never harvest because they're laid either on the slats or in the scratch area. And so we have better tools now to figure out why they are laying in places outside the nest. So it has just a great value in our industry. I'm very excited. That was one of the reasons I thought twice about retiring. I was like, man, we finally are going to have some great tools. I look to the future on that. We've got some great young people out there.
So do you think these are simply research tools, or is this something that might help individual producers in the future to identify specific problems in their facilities?
Oh, I definitely think that it will come down to individual producers, that these tools will be made more and more, well, less expensive, more user friendly, and they will be at the producer level for sure. Because every chicken house I've ever been in is slightly different, and they have their own little quirky things. Sometimes you can identify them, and sometimes you're going to need help in identifying, you know, what's the real issue there. Even, you know, in my career, I've seen stray voltage as a problem. and in these houses, and it's really difficult to identify. Sometimes it is seasonal, which seems weird, but it has been. It could also be different times during the day, because it depends on what is downline from you electrically. Let's just say you have a chicken house that's close to a large company, you know, that's downline, and they increase their usage at a certain time of day, which can cause more stray voltage. So, you know, AI will help us identify all kinds of issues, you know, in the future. I'm sure, now I'm no ventilation expert, but I would say it'll help us identify issues with ventilation as well. I mean, bottom line, we can't be in the chicken house 24/7. Yeah. And so to have these sort of tools will help us identify issues that we can solve and help help make a more comfortable environment for these birds.
Well, Gina, I always enjoy talking broiler breeders with you. I learn a lot.
Thank you. Thank you.
It's time for our famous three. We want to thank the innovative companies and products whose support and trust make this podcast possible.
Adiseo provides nutritional solutions and services to help producers achieve their targets in a high-quality, safe, and sustainable way. Evonik, we are sciencing the global food challenge. At Signify Animal Lighting, we use light as a tool, backed by science to support growth, comfort, and performance. Better light, better animals. Better results with Signify. A worldwide leader in animal nutrition, Adiseo's portfolio of products includes methionine, the full range of vitamins, enzymes, organic selenium, probiotics, mycotoxin management strategies, and palatability products. With such a diverse offering, Adiseo supports its customers with a broad range of expertise, tools, and services to help them maintain a competitive advantage. Adiseo, fueling predictable profits. To learn more, visit Adiseo at www.adiseo.com.
Before we let you go today, we've got our famous three questions. So, Gina, what is your favorite poultry or agriculture-related book or resource?
Well, as you know, there are not a lot of poultry books out there. I won't go there, but one of the books is still in print, I believe, but it's an old text called Commercial Poultry Production. And I always have told my students that's the poultry Bible. It has a lot of old data in it, sometimes not appropriate for today, but it is one text I pick up when I have no idea where to go. Because it covers a wide swath in the poultry world, and at least gets you started is what I have always seen. Sometimes there'll be some little quirky thing about, a disease that pops up, but it has a great disease section. Incubation has a good section there. So that to me has just been one of those books that I've relied upon, and probably somebody like you, Doug, should write a current copy of that. But anyway,
in my free time.
yeah, that's for me too, in my free time. But a great book, and I would always recommend that you have a copy in your office somewhere.
Okay. All right. Second question. What's your favorite book or resource outside of agriculture?
I used to read war novels, but my son is in the military now and I can't stand to read those anymore. So I've been reading, I like inspirational type books today, uplifting. And I've been reading a book by, I can't recall his name. I'm not well prepared for this, but it's a current book. So anybody could Google it. It's The Miracles Amongst Us. And that is has been pretty inspirational to me in the last months. So I recommend it.
And our final question, in your opinion, what is the most important characteristic that a person should have in order to be successful in your field?
I would say there are two that are pretty equal. One is you've got to be inquisitive, and that's probably good for really anybody, especially if you want to do any sort of research. You've got to always be questioning and looking at things. And then the other one is perseverance. And I've always told my graduate students, I only had one redeeming trait in life, and it's perseverance. I mean, because the answers don't come fast. Not the breeder business, anyway. You've got to look at it and look at it again.
Well, Dr. Gina Wilson, thanks so much for joining us today on the Poultry Podcast Show.
Thank you. Enjoyed it.
That concludes another episode of the Poultry Podcast Show, presented by Wisenetics. Thanks for joining us today. Don't forget to subscribe to our podcast to stay updated for future episodes. And if you enjoyed today's episode, please leave us a review. Your feedback is always important to us. You can visit our website at wisenetics.com and see all about our podcast segments for poultry, swine, dairy, beef, feed milk, crops, and even pet food. I'm Doug Corver, and I'll see you next time on the Poultry Podcast Show.